To show you.
Did Beetlejuice cross over? And he's like, yeah, dude. Hey, brother. It's showtime, dude. Oh, yeah, dude. What you gonna do when the host with the most runs wild on you, brother? Yeah, oh. Yeah, dude. It's showtime, brother. Yeah, we gotta save the Maitlands, brother.
Okay. You can Hulk Hogan anything, like, honestly, like, it really
dude,
is that.
I think Will Sasso is like a genius at it. He's got the best Hulk Hogan impression for sure.
He's just a fan. Yeah
he's fucking awesome. Yeah,
dude, he's great since the Mad TV fucking days. But you know what? I'm recording though. So
well,
you
dude,
know,
speaking of Will Sasso, oh man, I think he would have made a good Beetlejuice if he was like active in the 80s.
Yeah, right. He actually could have been. What do you call? Man, I wonder how young he would have looked, though. Because Keaton's kind of pushing a little bit on this one.
Yeah, he was already, like, in his 40s, I think.
Damn, dude.
I think Keaton was, like, 40, exactly 40 or 41 or 42 during Batman, which was, like, 88, 89. Gee, this is the movie before.
Right before,
so
yeah.
So he was probably already in his late 30s. He was probably, like, a little older than what we are right now.
That's a little scary. That was the scariest shit we've said on this podcast, I think, this whole time. Okay, with our mortality in question, let's go a little further. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is the Horrible People's Podcast. Yes, I'm introducing it. Alex Webster is incapacitated right now, but she is A-okay. No need to check any true crime channels or anything. She's fine. Should be good. Yeah.
We went to HorrorCon over the weekend, and I think we're all still trying to recover from that.
Yeah, we're all a little dead. That's true. We're all a little dead, but who's really dead is obviously the subject of our first October episode. That's right, spooky season, according to Instagram, is active. Oh, okay, you know, Webster leaves for one fucking second, then we get...
And it all goes to hell, right?
Yeah. If you hear a quick cut right there, it's because we said Alex's name three times on accident, and she showed up and she said we were fucking up, but she dipped again. But you know what is the name of the movie we're covering, Phil? What is it?
Beetlejuice. I'm only gonna say it once because I don't want to say it three times. Yeah.
No, not consecutive. You will say some other stuff too. So hey.
Yeah. Awesome. Right. Beetlejuice from 1988, my guy.
Damn, I was a little 1 year old by then. Oof.
Okay. Well, release date was March 30th, 1988. I was not alive.
You were not alive.
No, not until this. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Holy shit. I've been alive for 3 months.
Okay, yeah. There you go. All right. Yeah. You're a little useless baby at that point. That makes sense.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm.
Speaking of useless, what does IMDb have to say about this?
Oh, God. Wow. Really good.
Thank you.
Well, you know what? Actually, this is not that bad, but I'll read it right here. Here you go. The IMDb synopsis says, the spirits of a deceased couple are harassed by an unbearable family that has moved into their home and hire a malicious spirit to drive them out.
Actually, that's a pretty good log line
right there. It's all
right.
Yeah. Malicious spirit? They're making Beetlejuice sound like a serial killer, which we will touch up a little bit on that later. Watch. Yeah,
I am aware of that one. So, yes. Okay, cool. Well, keep going.
Yeah, let's keep going. Beetlejuice was, of course, written by Michael McDowell and Warren. I have been butchering this last name. Skarin? Warren Skarin. Oh, that's just on brand.
Yeah, that is pretty on brand.
And of course, Beetlejuice is directed by our boy, fellow friend of the podcast, I think, right?
Yeah,
Tim Burton.
Definitely.
Tim Burton.
He's one of the boys.
Many times during the process of writing this script, I kept on writing Time Burton. Because I think I'm a pretty fast typer, and sometimes my fingers are a little too fast. So every time I would write Tim Burton's name on this outline, I would have to go back and I'm like, erase the E on Time. And I was like, dude, it's not Time Burton, it's just Tim Burton.
You should have said, some Tim, my fingers are a little too fast.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. God. Yeah, you're just going to keep doing this, man. I appreciate it.
I gotta accommodate the cringe. I can't get it out of Webster. I gotta up the game a little bit, you know?
Like, yeah. And if you're like making me cringe, then we got an issue, buddy.
God, Jesus. All right. Man, we got a couple of paragraphs to go. You're right.
All right. Let's keep going. All right. So, as mentioned, directed by Tim Burton, and Beetlejuice stars Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis.
Yep.
Winona Ryder, Catherine O'Hara, for sure, Jeffrey Jones, Glenn Shaddix, and of course, Michael fucking Keaton as Beetlejuice himself.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so Alex isn't here to write in our misogyny either. So that's another thing we got to accommodate.
Yeah,
I mean, Winona Ryder, I think a cross-sex is kind of appealing. Yeah.
Oh, dude, when we get to Letterboxd reviews, dude, I was struggling on finding a Letterboxd review that was not like, you know, mouth-watering or being horny or simping on Winona Ryder. And, you know, I can't blame him.
I can't blame him. I'm with you on that one. We'll get to that.
But Beetlejuice had a budget of 15 million smackaroos.
Oh, shit.
And at the box office, this sucker made $74.7 million, dude.
Oh, my gosh. And it's so many more tapes, too, in Mexican households, for sure. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
I definitely had this on VHS as a kid. Did you?
Every single... Me, my tias, all of them. Everybody had this one.
This was a big one.
It was a big one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was a big one. I remember constantly watching this as a kid, and my dad would join because he fucking loved this movie.
Oh, yeah. This and Edward Scissorhands. We were Burton heads back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
It was just our family. 100%. On Batman, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Batman was... Yeah, I think that was, like, my introduction. Well, you know, I was watching Batman... Not even knowing that what a director was.
Yeah.
And then when I started getting into movies, like as a young kid, I started seeing the Tim Burton name. So I was like, okay, I think a director is like the guy that makes the movie. And I'm thinking this Tim Burton guy did the same Batman and Beetlejuice. Okay, so I was putting two and two together.
Yes. So. It was always the commercials I would say from the director of, and then it was also two thumbs up by Siskel and Ebert. That's how I knew movie reviewers and I knew who directors were. Was based off of those TV spots.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What a different time. Oh, we got to divvy up these spots differently.
Oh, I know, right? We do got to update them. But you want to go ahead and take this first one?
Yeah, I'll go. Yeah. I'll go in there. All right, cool. All right, cool. Well, the Handbook for the Recently Deceased. That's right. The story takes place in Winter River, Connecticut, where Barbara and Adam Maitland... Is that how you say that? I can't remember.
Maitland.
Have begun their staycation. Staycations, all of it. Yeah. In their country home.
Might I just emphasize, staycation is the best kind of vacation.
Yeah, dude. I honestly, like, in between... Okay, so I've been in between jobs for the past 2 years twice, and they were, like, the best moments of my life. Just 3 weeks of just like, oh, yeah, I live here and I have money. I'm good. Let's do it.
Every time I watch Beetlejuice and I see Barbara and Adam being so happy-go-lucky to the fact that they're staying home for their vacation, you know, as an extroverted guy, I'm like, you know what? I got to respect that because I like going out and going on a vacation out of state, out of town or whatever, but, like, nothing beats staying at home.
No, I'm with it. Mm-hmm. I'm with it. I'll do it again, too. We'll see. But as they're coming back from a trip to town, Barbara swerves as they try to avoid a dog crossing the street. Dog is fine. But unfortunately for Adam and Barbara, their car plunges off the bridge and onto the river, which is a scary scene as a child, for sure.
Oh, I know.
Mm-hmm. With a little slapstick because the dog gets off the plank and it's kind of hilarious. So I thought that was so cool. That's a Burton touch right there.
That was a Burton touch.
Yeah. Later, Adam and Barbara arrive back in their home. Notice things are a little weird. Yeah. Well, first they spot that they don't have reflections on mirrors and find a book called The Handbook for the Recently Deceased. Adam, I don't think we survived the crash, says Barbara, as she and Adam acknowledge that they are, in fact, dead. By the way, Adam and Barbara is a very fine Gina Davis and the skinniest Adam... Alec
Say
Baldwin.
It.
Yeah.
Say it. And a very fine Adam Alec Baldwin.
That's true. A very fine. If they had just given him a tuxedo. They did a little bit, but they made him dead. So, you know?
Yeah. Dude was handsome as fuck, dude. I'm not going to lie. Back to the Letterboxd reviews. Somebody wrote, that is Alec Baldwin? Yeah. What?
I feel like that's why the execs were like, wait a minute. There's six of them? Get the whole family. Get the whole fucking family on top of the screen right now.
Dude, did you ever see the Shadow?
No, what the fuck's The Shadow?
With Alec Baldwin. It's a superhero flick from the late 80s.
Wait. Very possibly. Very possibly.
He's like kind of dressed like in a cowboy suit, and he has like this superpower where he can like kind of disappear in shadows, basically.
Oh, that sounds like 80s as fuck.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie since I was a kid, but I thought it was fucking awesome.
Oh, you know what?
Came out around the same time as like The Rocketeer and stuff like that.
Oh, that was a good one too. What was that? Mm-hmm. Johnson, what was his last name? Was it Joe Johnson?
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was.
He was a good director also. It was Captain America over there. But, yep. You know, if there's any super horror movie that we can cover besides Blade, obviously, we got to do Darkman one of these days.
Ooh, God, yes. You know what? Damn, remind me. I think I might just do that for my Christmas or my birthday month.
Dude.
Because I've been wanting to cover Darkman. Darkman fucking rules, dude.
And we love our Raimi over here. Mm-hmm. He does indeed rule. So,
yes.
When Adam attempts to step out of the house, he magically arrives in a desert-like dimension filled with giant sandworms. Even though Adam was in this weird world for a few moments, Barbara claims that he was gone for 2 hours. Besides being dead, things go even further south for the Maitlands. They up the stakes pretty dead. Early. That's right. They be dead.
Damn sandworms.
Their house is sold to the Dietz family from New York City. Charles Dietz is a real estate developer. His wife, Delia Dietz, is a sculptor, and his teenage daughter, Lydia, is an aspiring photographer. Delia and interior designer Otho. Transform the Maitland's home into a pastel tone work of postmodern art.
This is the Dietz family, and I like it's a pretty cool introduction seeing them. We are introduced to Charles, Delia, and Lydia. But I always thought it was so cool, like, I don't know, like as a kid, you know, we talk about first crushes and stuff like that, and I think I've acknowledged, like, I think it was like Power Ranger or the Pink Ranger. Christina Ricci and Casper. But then, like, also, I was already watching Beetlejuice, and I was already, like, I think third crush. If it wasn't Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman, then I think it was for sure, like, Winona Ryder in this. The way we're introduced to her, she's, like scoping the house out. She's got a film camera. She's all goth and cute as hell and stuff like that. And, great introduction to this character. And then Delia, she's just like, careful, that's my sculpture. I mean, I don't mind. Like, I bought it. I made it. You know, it's my sculpture. Put her on the table.
Oh,
dude,
my God.
Dude, Catherine O'Hara, she's incredible in this.
She really is. This was her zone. Like, this early, late 80s, early 90s Catherine O'Hara. Oh, my Lord. Mm-hmm. I think you're right, though, because, you know, this is one of those movies that it happens when you're a kid before, like, your early, this is before you're born. So you kind of get memories as this movie is playing.
Yeah.
And like for a kid crush, when you're a child, Winona Ryder is kind of like the go-to. Feel like. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
100%. One of them. Yeah, Pink Ranger, though, was also my jam quite a bit back in the day. Oh, yeah.
Shout out, Kimberly. We love you, Kimberly.
For real. And then you want this or we just
Go for it. Keep going. Yeah, keep going.
All right, let's keep going.
Hey. Go for it.
All right. So as Barbara and Adam consult the handbook, they are guided as they travel to the world of the dead. That's right. The Maitlands meet their caseworker, Juno. Juno explains to the Maitlands that they are to stay in their home for 125 years. And if they want the Dietz out of their house, they're going to have to scare them out. And I do like the mundane aspect of, like, the dead. That's hilarious.
I love, like, the waiting room, the huge, like, office of just, like, a whole bunch of, like, office workers. Everyone's dead. That flat dude that's just hanging, and he's just, like, he goes to the waiting room and calls the next up, you know, and...
It's a visual spectacle in this shit.
Yeah, the sets are really incredible in this.
This feels like the most Burton. It's just a very Burton-y, Burton-y thing.
Yeah. 100%.
A little more soju there. All right, anyways.
There you go. Look at you, dude.
Hey, spooky season. All right, so.
Sipping on that Beetlejuice.
That's a good one. Even though Charles and Delia can't see Adam and Barbara, it's the teenager Lydia who can physically see the Maitlands. So according to the handbook for the recently deceased, quote, only the strange and unusual can see the living. And of course, unquote. And Lydia claims that she herself is strange and unusual, and her personality explains a lot of my early crushes for sure in the schoolyard, because I was a weird boy and I wanted the weird girl.
There's that quote, I myself am strange and unusual, and then the later when they're having dinner, when she says, my whole life is a dark room.
Yeah.
One big dark room. That's like heavily quoted amongst fans of this movie, and pop culture. They're cool lines.
There's some good writing in this one.
You go from like September 30th to not saying very much at all to October 1st, you're saying one of these quotes.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But furthermore, the Maitlands, not listening to Gino's advice, make contact with, of course, Beetlejuice, a former assistant to Juno who now works as a freelance bioexorcist. And this supernatural miscreant is obnoxious, gross, perverted, and just an overall morbid demeanor. Kind of like someone I know. Phyllis Vader.
Look at you, dude. That's good.
Yeah, it's funny because Beetlejuice is first introduced via an infomercial earlier on in...
I love that infomercial.
Yes. He's the title character, and he's just like an on-screen. He doesn't even look like he does in the freaking posters. It's awesome. Mm-hmm.
He's like a car salesman vibes. He's got car salesman vibes going on. He's like, hey, go on and bring a little kid or two. We got all kinds of snakes and lizards for them too. Now remember, snake once, say it twice, third time's a charm. And I'll eat anything you want me to eat. I'll swallow anything you want me to swallow. Dude, I used to quote that whole freaking that infomercial all the time.
Oh my god, your dad was like, mijo, don't say the last one.
He even quotes, I'll even chew on a dog. Dude, he's my gosh, dude.
Keaton
was insane for this.
Oh yeah. Well, of course. Well, the Maitlands consider hiring Beetlejuice to scare the Deetzes away from their home, but leave it to Beetlejuice to quickly offend them with his gross behavior. Now, regardless of the Maitlands not hiring Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice still finds a way to wreak havoc. That's right. How does that happen?
And wreak havoc he does, right? I'm talking about our boy Beetlejuice here. If we can just talk about the time where the Maitlands, actually... say Beetlejuice three times and they go into the scale model.
Yes.
And then they talk with Beetlejuice and Beetlejuice is just like, yeah, dude, like just hire me and I'll scare whatever you want, dude. I'll scare them, like get me out of here. I just need to go into the living room. Like I just love that whole scene. The way we're introduced. We don't see Beetlejuice for about an hour?
It's over an hour, right? Up until an
hour into the movies when we saw like tidbits here and there. We'll hear his voice in a scene. There's a scene where like he's looking for a job through a newspaper, but we're just seeing like his hands.
I was looking at the runtime too. I was like, it's been a little bit, and there's not much movie left, which is kind of crazy.
The movie is called Beetlejuice, and if you're watching the opening credits of the movie, which fucking fantastic music by Danny Elfman. We'll get to that later.
Oh yeah.
But the opening credits of the movie, when they're listening, when they're listing all the actors involved, you could go with Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis, Catherine O'Hara. Everybody gets their name first, and then at the very end it says, "And Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice." That's like, I don't see that often in movies.
No, that's a weird billing, right?
Where the title character is billed last. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Burton kind of sort of does it again in Batman by having Jack Nicholson be billed first. But then it's Michael Keaton. But Beetlejuice, there's a whole cast of actors, and then it's Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
I always found that fascinating for some reason.
No, yeah, same here. He is clearly the title character, so they probably give like, you're the exclamation point, buddy. You're the exclamation point to this whole thing. Because that's a pretty stacked cast.
Yeah, and another unique thing is, like, you're the title character, but you don't show up until, like, an hour into the movie, which I always thought another fascinating thing about this movie.
That he's only alluded to a lot of the time, so he's not really, like, front and center to the, like, the push of the story yet. Yeah. But then, he comes in full force.
In Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal gets, like, a total of, like, 11 minutes in the movie, but it's not called Hannibal. In Hannibal, the sequel, he's in the movie way more, obviously,
Yeah.
Which is... insane. But anyways, let's keep going with this story breakdown as we continue. Mm-hmm. Due to recent supernatural events that included a giant Beetlejuice snake, which is awesome,
yeah,
shrimp hands, and Harry Belafonte's Deo possessing the Dietzes, Charles Dietz gets inspired to pitch his boss, Maxie Dean, to collaborate with him in turning the town into a goddamn tourist hotspot.
Okay, the Deo scene, dude, as a child, I would just fast forward to play that shit sometimes. Mm-hmm. That was great.
That's the type of scene where, to this day, we're in the middle. We're not in the middle. Spooky season just started, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a family tradition that we throw on Beetlejuice. Mm-hmm. And my mom has seen this movie so many times. My dad has seen this movie so many times. If we're all busy doing stuff around the house, I would put it on Beetlejuice and we would just have it in the background. But when it comes to the Deo shrimp dance scene in the dining room, that's like a scene where we all get together. It's like, oh, look, here it comes. And then we all kind of sit down and watch this scene. This scene's like, what, 5 minutes long? Maybe not even 5 minutes long. And it's just a beautiful scene. Catherine O'Hara, Jeffrey Jones, they do a great job. And the shrimp hands at the end just makes it's just the cherry on top, dude.
Yeah, it's so strange. Okay, so for that, you're exactly right. If this movie's playing and the Deo scene comes on, everybody stops what they're doing and just kind of like looks towards the TV because the kitchen's mm-hmm. at the TV and we're normally in the kitchen also. Yeah. It's that scene and then Joe Pesci and his brother getting killed at the end of the casino are the two scenes that my family always stops to like, what the no fuck? Matter what they're doing. Very different scenes.
Jesus, oh my God.
But the same like, oh, we can't look away. Like, yeah. it's just good filmmaking.
Oh, my God. Joe Pesci death scene. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's a brutal-ass scene.
That's too. A very brutal scene. I showed some of my friends in high school that mm-hmm. didn't watch a lot of rated R movies, thinking, mm-hmm. like, oh, everybody's seen Martin Scorsese movies. And this wasn't the case at all.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, anyways, let's continue here. Yeah. Otho helps Charles in this endeavor, and he gets possession of the fucking handbook for the recently deceased.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the book has landed into the wrong hands. Mm-hmm. So Otho, joined by Charles, Lydia, Maxie Dean, and his wife, gather around and perform what Otho thought was a seance. But it turns out that it was an actual exorcism, and he summons Barbara and Adam using their wedding clothes. Things are starting to get a little saucy. The Maitlands begin to age rapidly. This is all during Otho's exorcism, when he thought it was just he confused a seance with an exorcism. I don't know.
He's not the best. Yeah, he's
just... He wasn't really trying to kill them. He was just trying to present them over to Maxie and his wife.
They want to get them tourism dollars right there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The Maitlands begin to age rapidly, however, and Otho does not know how to put a stop to it.
This scene scared the shit out of me, though.
Actually. Yeah,
this one always kind of got me. Mm-hmm. I think I actually had some early nightmares of just like mm-hmm. my skin just aging and, you know. Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. Charles, too. Charles, the dad, like, as capitalistic, you know, everything he saw was like a dollar sign in like the town and the house and the Maitlands. Even he thought it was wrong. He's like, dude, Otho, could he put a stop to this?
Yes.
This is getting out of hand. And then Otho's like going through the books. He's like, dude, I don't know. Like, there's nothing I can do to stop it. I'm sorry. And so, this is where the story takes a new turn. Mm-hmm. Desperate to save the Maitlands, Lydia summons Beetlejuice for help. And Beetlejuice agrees to help, but under one condition, that he needs to get married so that he can freely roam around the world of the living. Mm. Kind of like, you know, when you know, a non-U.S. citizen marries a U.S. citizen, so that way, you know, that person becomes a U.S. citizen. That's what's going on with Beetlejuice here.
Again, bureaucracy. It's just bureaucracy that fucking does it. Burton, fantastic work, honestly, because mm-hmm. it is, you're like, of course the most mundane shit would get him permanent residence amongst the living. That's the world of Beetlejuice. Yeah,
exactly. And after saving the Maitlands. So what does Lydia do? She says Beetlejuice three times and we get mm-hmm. the infamous it's showtime. And so Beetlejuice agrees to help and he finds a way to save the Maitlands. Then Beetlejuice gets rid of Maxie and his wife with the what are those called? Test your strength hammer smashing thing that you'll find at a World's Fair.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I like how both Maxie and his wife get launched through the roof. That shit was hilarious. But as soon as everything is back to normal, Beetlejuice prepares for his wedding with Lydia. Which, watching this now as an adult is kind of weird.
It's a little
creepy.
It's a little creepy.
How old is Lydia supposed to be in this movie? Like 17, 16?
I surely hope very close to age of consent.
I don't think Winona Ryder was this age, but she must have been like in her early 20s, maybe pushing 20 or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, but Michael Keaton was fucking 40, or he's pushing 40 at least.
It was still kind of weird as a kid, to be honest with you. It was still a little weird as a kid, but only because it was like, she doesn't want to do it, and then he keeps stopping, you know? So that was the part that got me.
He's kind of forcing himself to get married with her.
Yeah, that
forcing
part was
her
a
to get married
weird.
With him. Yeah. So it's during the wedding scene where Barbara and Adam intervene before the wedding is complete, as Barbara crashes the party by riding a sandworm through the ceiling and onto Beetlejuice himself.
Yeah, that's right. Good scene.
I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, there's different attempts. I like how, like, Barbara says Beetlejuice, and then Beetlejuice is like, throws like a zipper?
Yeah, a zipper. Like, and she unzips it.
And then she unzips it, says it again, and then this time he throws like a metal pallet onto her face or something like that.
Dude.
And then Adam gets shrunken into the scale model world and drives the little pickup truck onto Beetlejuice's foot. That was really cool.
Honestly, watching this movie and like The Mask and having both on VHS back to back, we got a good amount of like adult cartoons. Mm-hmm. Like IRL cartoons.
Yeah.
Like, this definitely had that logic, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh, that's really well put. I love that. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
I've been doing this for 5 years, Phil. Come on. Watching movies all the time.
Oh, I know. So, to continue here, the Dietzes and the Maitlands agree to live together in harmony. Beetlejuice remains stuck in the afterworld in a waiting room where a witch doctor shrinks his head. I love this scene, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, he's like number 1 million and something, and then like they're barely calling number 4, and he's like, pardon me, did you do that? Hey, there goes Elvis. Oh, king. And then he takes his
number,
the witch doctor sprinkles that magic dust onto it, and then he shrinks his head. I used to have that toy, actually.
Wait,
It was Beetlejuice wearing that burgundy tuxedo, he was still wearing like his wedding tuxedo.
Mm-hmm.
But he had like a shrunken head. It was like a super shrunken head, just like in the movie. But I had that toy when I was a kid. Yeah, it was freaking awesome. As we already talked about the shrunken head, the film ends with Lydia floating in the air and dancing to Harry Belafonte's Jump in the Line. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line. That song freaking rules, dude.
That's true. Yeah.
I like how the football players show up at the behind Lydia in the staircase. That was so cool. The ghosts of the football players.
Yeah, them in the beginning asking like, "Coach," because like, "I'm not your coach."
I was like, "I don't think we survived that crash." He's like, "How'd you guess?"
Oh, what great characters.
Men's room.
Oh, dude. I love how, like, again, Tim Burton characters all have that, like, hint of 50s Americana in them.
Yeah.
And this is no different. This is a good one.
Man, I rewatched this movie in preparation as I'm writing the script for this, man. I'm just, like, watching this. This is probably, like, I've seen this movie so many freaking times. I know, like, the back of my hand. But I'm just, like, once again, I'm just, like, asking myself, what happened to Tim Burton, man? Like, there's that Simpsons phrase, "You used to be cool, man."
Yeah.
Like, we'll get more into that later on. But let's talk a little bit about the production, since we just wrapped up on this, you know, the story breakdown. We already tackled that. Let's go a little behind the scenes, right?
Oh yeah.
So our boy Timmy here, he had seen success after Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and the studios were looking at him as a bankable director.
That he was.
Oh, and of course, before Beetlejuice, Burton and writer Sam Hamm were already working on a script for Batman. And this is where Warner Brothers was not yet ready to greenlight Batman. They already wanted Burton to direct him, but they're just like, "Yo, we're still trying to get a cast. We're still trying to get Nicholson, you know, involved, and you know, we're still looking for our Batman, you know." So like,
we're gonna put millions of dollars into this, like a lot of money. Yeah. We need to just make sure everything's crossed.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. So, in the meantime, while Warner Brothers was getting their shit together for Batman, In the meantime, Tim Burton was looking for his next project while he while Batman remained in development. Oh, I got a little typo there.
That's fine. See, I'm not going to call it out. Or I'm going to let it just chill there, right there.
All right.
But also, listeners, for more on this portion of Tim Burton's career, check out our Batman Returns episode, which Phil was also on back last December. That was a good one.
Good call. Good call. Good call. Also, we have a full-on Batman episode, too, where all things Batman on film and cinema and stuff like that, too. There's that episode, too.
We are Bat fans in this podcast.
We are.
Sure.
We definitely are.
And Burton fans, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it was producer David Geffen who handed Tim Burton Michael McDowell's script for Beetlejuice. So, you know, while Batman was still being in development, Tim Burton was looking for his project. He was going through all these scripts. As I was doing some research on this, he was just like not feeling anything that was landing on his desk. Tim Burton was just like, nah. And then this is where Geffen gave him the script for Beetlejuice, and Tim Burton was immediately on board. But he brought on Warren Scarron for rewrites for the script. McDowell is still listed as like one of the writers.
Yeah.
But his script was just too damn dark and far less comedic. Now, that's crazy for it being too dark for Mr. Tim Burton here.
Yeah.
And we're gonna get you. Some examples on why it was a little too dark and a little too weird, even for Tim Burton. So here's one right here.
I just think. Oh, real quick. I always think of like Back to the Future scene. It was like, you're just too darn loud.
you're just too damn loud, son, or too darn loud, son.
And that was Huey Lewis. That was
Huey
great.
Lewis in the news.
Yeah.
That was Huey Lewis right there. Mm-hmm. I keep forgetting that was actually Huey Lewis. That's right. So here's a few examples of what the script, the original script for Beetlejuice consisted of, right? So originally, the Maitland's car crash scene was depicted to be very, very much too graphic, as Barbara's arms gets crushed and both of them end up screaming for help and they slowly drown in the car. It was very detailed in the script on how the Maitlands died.
Damn.
It was all just think of Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis in the car as the water starts rising and Gina Davis's arm gets like crushed, like fucking destroyed. And they scream and they just drown, slowly drown. And so it was like graphically shown in the script originally.
Yeah, was the dog scene still there?
I didn't see the dog stuff, but that was like the reason why they got in the car crash was the dog. But I just don't know if the 2x4 being held by the dog was still there. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be
that might have been a Tim Burton thing.
That'd be too like, oh, cool, the dog did it, and then it gets way dark after that.
The original script for Beetlejuice had no comedy in it, so that dog scene that we're talking about. It might have been added with the Warren Scarron rewrite.
Yeah.
So also Beetlejuice is also like he's known as Beetlegeist, like that's his like name, but I guess his nickname is Beetlejuice.
Interesting.
But yeah, Beetlegeist is depicted as a winged demon who takes the form of a short Middle Eastern man who has intentions in killing the Dietzes instead of just scaring them. And he was also, this is kind of weirder here.
Yeah,
he was also laser focused in having sex with Lydia instead of just trying to marry her. Like he was legit just trying to bang her.
And kill the family, huh?
Yeah. Oh. So imagine a winged demon who takes the form of a short Middle Eastern man who has intentions of ending the life of Charles and Lydia Dietz and is just trying to bang Lydia. 16-year-old Lydia the whole time. That is.
Damn.
Fucking weird, man.
Beetle Bin Laden, man, nah.
Oh,
I'm with that.
Oh my god, I almost spilled the water here. Oh man, wow.
Yeah.
Let's continue on the original script for Beetlejuice. This dark and twisted and fucking weird script.
There's more.
In the original script, there was another Dietz child. And during the film's climax, Beetlejuice ends up mutilating her in the form of a rabid squirrel before revealing his true form.
Jeez.
So, yeah. So there was actually two kids, Lydia, and she had a sister. And towards the end of the movie, she ends up getting killed by Beetlejuice. But by getting mutilated by squirrel form Beetlejuice, if that makes any sense.
Oh, the most harmless fucking animal too, Jesus
yeah, Christ. Yeah, I know. So I'm assuming like he just runs like super, super fast and just keeps going through this Dietz child's body like yeah, many times. Yeah,
I know, right?
Oh, God. It's fucking weird,
very quick rabies. Very quick rabies.
Oh, I know. Super. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of Zombievers, but like in squirrel form.
There you go.
There we go. All right, so even more stuff here. Well, actually, no, I think that's at the end of the weird stuff. But Warren Scarron takes the script, and he turned it into a massive shift tone, and he received major approvals by Tim Burton and the studio. So they took the script, and this Warren Scarron guy was like, dude, let's see what we can do. They yeah, like, shift great the tone.
Concept.
Yeah, they made it funny. They threw in, they got rid of the weird shit. You know, mm-hmm. So, yeah. But when it came to casting, Tim Burton originally wanted Sammy Davis Jr.
Okay. He wanted Sammy Davis Jr. I wanted Beetlejuice.
Oh my god, dude. This was midnight when I wrote this.
Okay.
So, Tim Burton originally wanted Sammy Davis Jr. as Beetlejuice. Can you picture this?
Oh, geez, no.
Producers of the film were also considering Dudley Moore and Sam Kinison.
Oh, Sam Kinison would have been badass.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
I thought the same exact thing when I was pulling this info up, and I was like, oh, Sam Kinison, right, Beetlejuice. Okay, right. In the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude. But it was David Geffen who suggested Michael Keaton for the role, and Tim Burton was actually easily convinced in this choice. Keaton at the time was already doing movies like Mr. Mom, and he was doing a lot of funny stuff, and I think he was he also showed like his dramatic side in that one alcoholic movie
mm-hmm.
where he plays like a heroin alcoholic addict.
Yeah, he was also a very good comedian too at the time.
Yeah,
was very
absolutely. Well known. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So they're just like, yeah, Tim Burton was like easily convinced. He's like, all right, you know, forget the whole Sammy Davis Jr. thing. Let's go with Keaton. So,
is Kinison coked out right now? I can't deal with that one. Okay.
Yeah, Kinison, yeah. Mm-hmm. Dude, but like, honestly, I could easily vision Sam Kinison as Beetlejuice.
Oh, dude. In the 80s. Yeah, performance wise. He's like right there, dude. Like, 100%. It's actually pretty perfect.
Yeah.
Dudley Moore is fine, whatever. He can probably do it. But like, Kinison, great.
Mm hmm. So, and also, additionally, the role for Lydia Dietz was auditioned by several actresses like Juliette Lewis, ooh, Molly Ringwald, Jennifer Connelly, and Sarah Jessica Parker, who she would later work with Tim Burton on in Ed Wood, which is actually probably my favorite Tim Burton film.
That's definitely up there, but also, what a cast selection here. That was actually, Juliette Lewis would have been fantastic. Molly Ringwald would have been interesting, at least. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Connelly also would have been fucking great.
I think Connelly would have actually, her and Winona Ryder, I think, would have been my top choices if I was casting this.
Absolutely. And Sarah Jessica Parker would have done the role.
Yeah.
Would have been fine.
Yeah, sure, been fine, yeah. Mm-hmm. And get this right here. Angelica Houston was already set to play Delia Dietz. She already had the role. She was already cast as Delia.
Damn.
But she had to drop out due to illness. So she was going to play the mom. But of course, we all know that Angelica Houston went on in her career to play another famous mom of heavy goth vibes as Morticia Adams later. Mm. Like, just like, what, 3 years later?
Only a little bit later. Yeah,
like 2 or 3 years later, she'll play Morticia. But
she was destined for goth momdom. Mm. That absolutely. Was, no matter what was going to happen.
Absolutely. Since Angelica Houston had to step out of the role, this is where Catherine O'Hara quickly signed on. And according to Tim Burton, she was the one who immediately signed on. All the other cast members, even Keaton himself, were like, all like, It took them a while to sign on for the roles because no one knew what to think of this very weird and bizarre script.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, if they went with the original script, I'm pretty sure they would have been like, no, I'm not doing this shit. What the hell is this? but I guess like the new rewritten script, I guess, from Scarron. I guess that there were still like a lot of skepticism amongst the cast, you know, but Catherine O'Hara was like immediately signed on. Who knows what the reasons were? She might have needed the money or whatever.
That's but... why that was my first, that was my instinct also. I'm like, but, yeah.
She would, I think this is their first collaboration with Tim Burton because she would obviously end up working on The Nightmare Before Christmas as Sally.
Mm.
But, and then of course we all know Catherine O'Hara probably the best, maybe the most, as Kevin McAllister's mom.
Precisely.
In Home Alone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. in Home Alone 1 and 2.
That's right. Lost in New York, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Come on!
Anyways, production was underway as the exterior scenes were shot in Vermont, while all the interior scenes were all shot at the Culver Studios and good old Culver City. I am a walking distance away from Culver Studios, man. So
Michael Keaton, yeah. he went to go piss outside on the wall outside that studio, and you know he did it.
Yeah. Dude, mm-hmm. we can take tours to the Culver Studios. I just looked up the website as I was pulling the info on this.
Oh, I'm so down. I'm so down. Yeah. That Warner Brothers tour was awesome. I'm sure
it'll be. All right, Flint Serino. Let's do it. Why don't you go ahead and take the wheel on this one?
Well, we got Dan Med's party.
There you go.
Oingo Boingo's the shit. Anyways, so when it comes to Beetlejuice, there are two big major contributors to the film's music, and of course that is Harry Belafonte and the one and only Danny motherfucking Elfman, my boy.
Mm-hmm.
Beetlejuice soundtrack was all written and developed by Elfman, and Geffen reissued the film's soundtrack, of course, on vinyl in 2019 for the film's 30th anniversary.
Dude, I mean, there was not a whole bunch of info I could have gotten on Danny Elfman on how he got the job. I mean, he already collaborated with Tim Burton for Pee-wee's Big Adventure, but like the music, I struggled a little bit on finding like info on Danny Elfman's involvement with Beetlejuice. We all know that he did it and he composed the music and stuff like that, but
yeah.
Dude, that fucking the opening credits, man, alone.
Oh my gosh, that, dude.
It's got a lot of heavy tubas like yeah, it's a fucking awesome ass tune.
That's
dude.
I got to get that song on my Spotify, so when I'm just driving to work, I need to bump that. Like that's a good. Okay, so I had this thought actually earlier today. I don't know, it was probably in the shower or something. It was the shower thought. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, I know 80s kids all, like, early 80s kids all grew up with John Williams as their, like, guy that was their, you know, their childhood.
Yeah.
But us 90s kids got, of course, John Williams, and we got Elfman.
And
they
were Elfman.
Two drastically different styles, and I feel like that helped influence, like, the dynamicism of our, like, media tastes when it comes to music. Like,
100%. They really did. 100% agree with you on that one because, dude, I mean, I experienced, I think, you know, you hit the nail perfectly right there with how we grew up in the 90s. We were two major composers that we just saw a lot or heard a lot in
movies.
Heard
a lot.
Yeah,
heard a lot. In our movies, in our kid movies.
Yeah, for sure, like, you know, Williams and Elfman. Two completely different styles of film
composition.
Composition, thank you. And, dude, I mean, but you heard it, and they were all bangers. I freaking loved. I remember being at a young age, like knowing the difference, or being able to identify a Danny Elfman score.
Yes, absolutely. You know?
Especially when it's a Tim Burton movie, because those two collaborated a lot, and like, you know, but like I remember watching Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire one. And I was like, this sounds like it could be like a Danny Elfman score. I didn't even know what a score was at the time. But I was like, the music sounds like it was probably from that Danny Elfman guy. And then, boom, music by Danny Elfman. I'm like, whoa, holy shit. I'm
like front and center, too. That's the best part.
Mm-hmm. Seriously, man.
Yeah. And again, before I move on to this day.
Elfman.
Go for it.
And Beetlejuice. Yeah, no, and Beetlejuice was just one of those. I still have yet to see him in concert, and I really, really would like to see. I've seen John Williams in concert, but I've not seen Danny Elfman. I would love to see Danny Elfman in concert, and I can only imagine how awesome the atmosphere must be when he starts playing Beetlejuice.
Damn it, if I didn't have to pay for all my goddamn tires, I say we could have just done a show in Halloween. But, you know, let's hope he lives another year. Let's just hope he goes another year, and I'm fucking down next year.
Dude, have you seen him? He's jacked, dude.
I know, he's so healthy.
Danny Elfman's in shape, dude.
Dude, yeah, absolutely. He's still performing like a motherfucker with Oingo Boingo, whoever's left over in the background. Like, okay, we're getting too hard on Danny right now.
We really are.
Let's move on. Real quick, though, best soundtrack I've ever in my entire life is still Edward Scissorhands. My number one. My number one
of all of them. You have said this. Yeah, that's right. I love that.
All right. Well, the film's weirdness was drawing a lot of hype when it came to Beetlejuice's big release day. Being considered a financial success, Beetlejuice earned over $8 million in its opening weekend, eventually grossed over $74 million in North America. North America. So, over on Rotten Tomatoes, Beetlejuice holds 86% on the tomato meter and an 82% audience score. You know, you motherfucking 4%ers over there.
I know, right?
Fuck off. Let's go to Letterboxd, though. All right, so we struggled in finding Letterboxd reviews that weren't just being horny for Winona Ryder. So here's what we dug up, or we tried to at least. Yeah. So Adam Bolt, with 3 stars, says, "What I got from this is that if you say his name 3 times, a coked-out Michael Keaton appears and starts groping you." Wow. That's actually really... Okay. Right? 3 stars. That's a good one. Okay. Oh. George Hannah Wilson with 5 stars says, quote, "If Tim Burton made this movie today, Johnny Depp would play Beetlejuice and there would be a shit ton of CGI and corny nonsense. Luckily, Tim Burton made Beetlejuice when he still gave a shit. Beetlejuice is a masterpiece, period."
Ooh.
End quote. Shit. That's mean.
Aggressive. That's aggressive.
Wow, George Hannah Wilson. Holy fuck!
Mm-hmm. Like he loved Beetlejuice. He gave it 5 stars and he calls it a masterpiece. But he also had something to say about Tim Burton, mm-hmm. dude.
He's throwing that shade. Holy shit! All right. Yeah. Well,
I mean, like,
he's not wrong.
I was just gonna say, you know, our boy George Hannah Wilson here.
Our boy George.
I know. That was an accident. That
was an accident. You even accidentally cringe sometimes.
It I just know. Happened. You see? I was just gonna say, you know, he's not entirely wrong. Mm-mm. Could you imagine if Beetlejuice? We lived in a world where Beetlejuice the movie never existed and it came out now. Or 5 years ago or something like that. It'd definitely be Johnny Depp. And it would look like a CGI from wall to wall CGI, just like what he did with Alice in Wonderland. Dude, when I heard he was gonna do Alice in Wonderland, I was like, perfect, that's cool. And then I watched Alice in Wonderland, I'm like, dude, this kind of sucks. And
yeah, to be fair, yeah, I had that same sensation with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I was so hyped, dude. Yeah. And then it came out, I'm like, ah. Fuck, I can't stand this. I can't stand any goddamn second of this movie.
I know.
Yeah, it was bad.
I know. I remember being in high school when that one came out, and I was just like, I was pretty hyped for it. I was mm-hmm. like, dude, hell yeah, I knew Willy Wonka, because I grew up on the... We all grew up on the Gene Wilder one. And we watched the Tim Burton one, and I was like, it sounded good on paper, but
Definitely have the Joe Pesci like, what the fuck is this piece of shit? that's where I was.
What the fuck is this piece of shit?
By the way, we found out where that's from. Thanks to HorrorCon. We totally found out where it's from. Thank you, that podcast that I do not remember the name for now.
Tales from the Crypt podcast.
Tales from the Crypt podcast. You guys, for pointing that out on accident, because you didn't know either, but it's fine. Yeah. We all learn together. Mm-hmm. It is from a Tales from the Crypt episode. And it was awesome.
That meme format of Joe Pesci saying that's an actual, it's from an actual episode of Tales from the Crypt. I had no idea until we saw that at the con. I was like, hey, there's that meme. I was like, hey, this is from an episode of Tales from the Crypt? I was like, what the hell? I did not know that.
He's like, what the fuck is this happening on my screen right now? Yeah. That's how that's we work
hilarious.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. That is hilarious.
All right. Well, we got a little couple more.
Go for it.
Sarah Clements. I almost said Clemente. Sarah Clements, Clamata, with 4 stars, says, quote, "Not to sound straight, but young Alec Baldwin was a total snack." Quote, oh, I wish Webster would have read that.
Dude, I wrote that for Webster.
Yep.
Like, I was like, you know what? I was going to say, Webster, why don't you read this one right here? Because I remember we're joking around at the con, the three of us, and she said something, and I think the two of us were like, is that like a gay thing or something?
Yeah.
And then she's like, yeah. So this right here would have been a perfect Webster readout.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Oh, she would have sold the snack portion of that tremendously. So, of course, our Mariana Neal with 4.5 stars, concluding, says, "Iconic Halloween comfort movie time, exclamation point. I am with you, Mariana."
Absolutely.
That's right.
100%. Uh-huh. This is like I said earlier, I mean, like, dude, this is a movie that we throw on every October.
Yeah.
Me and the family. Like, my dad would be like, yo, it's Halloween, or it's October. How come we haven't seen Beetlejuice yet? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the afterworld of Beetlejuice. And that means, like, you know, post-release date. So what else does this IP have to
What you offer. Got, Phil? What you got, Mr. Yeah. Scriptwriter? Let's do it.
So here we go. So Beetlejuice obviously saw a lot of success after it's released. As you mentioned, what was that, 74 million? Something like that?
Yeah.
And so afterwards, what happens? An animated series was spawned that has a sick-ass intro. Did you ever watch the animated show?
Bro, I put the intro on my IG stories because, honestly, so good. That I think that helped make me a spooky boy right there. Like, I was always a spooky kid. The cartoon? Like the cartoon, because I always watched the movie, but the cartoon, I just tuned in all the fucking time. It was amazing. Yeah. And that intro, that animation is solid right there.
Dude, it's so good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, the cartoon, look, check this out. The animated show lasted four seasons from 1989 to 1991. I didn't know it was that old. I thought this came out like in the mid-90s.
Yeah,
I remember watching it. Maybe there were reruns or something like that, but
they did, it aired on ABC. Syndication for sure did.
Okay, yeah, thank you, thank you, yes. It aired on ABC and, of course, Fox Kids, man. Mm-hmm. Dude, that's where I was watching this.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I could have swore it aired also on Nickelodeon, but I didn't see any proof that Nickelodeon aired it. But
no, I don't think it was Nickelodeon, but I do remember, well, first the animated intro was still done by Danny Elfman. He did change... Yep. He just switched it up a little bit. Like, he actually made it a little more kid-friendly in there.
Yep.
And then, of course, the relationship with Beetlejuice and Lydia was different because they were, like, bros. Oh, yeah.
They were, like, friends. They were,
yeah,
like,
he wasn't
friends.
Trying to marry her as. Yeah. So that was always weird watching both because I was like, oh, right, he's a creep. Oh, whoa, no, they're kind of cool. Like, that was the tough part.
I'm kind of glad they changed that up for the kids, you know, because... Yeah, also, I mean, RoboCop had a animated show, too, aimed for kids, and there was, like, instead of, like, guns, it was, like, lasers, you know?
I just can't even... Oh, my Lord. Okay, when we cover RoboCop, we're gonna have to get into that shit. That is,
Something else. Oh, yeah. Oh, and then you also mentioned how Danny Elfman was involved in the intro's theme. Dude, that's two animated shows that he was involved. He did the same thing for Batman the Animated Series.
Damn, and that's a hot one right there, too.
So, all right, continuing on. So, besides the cartoon that was released, which, man, that I really would like to know where I could find the cartoon. I would like to relive some episodes there.
Yeah, that's the background.
That's
dude.
Yeah, I'll have to look for it.
Halloween party, slap in the background. Yeah. Just slap in the back.
Instead of Beetlejuice the movie, let's throw on the Beetlejuice cartoon. If we can find it,
that'd be
awesome.
Baby? Yeah.
I know.
All right.
So, besides the cartoon... there was the animated series actually spawned video games for both the Super Nintendo and the Game Boy. So you can actually play the Beetlejuice cartoon in the comfort of a Super Nintendo or a Game Boy, which I thought was really cool. I do remember it playing on Super Nintendo for sure.
I didn't have it, I think, because the games were so expensive. It was like Mario World, Donkey Kong, and Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, or my games.
Oh, man. I remember playing that and Gargoyles.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, which is getting a re-release.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I cannot wait. I'm actually going to buy that because that's another childhood thing. Yeah, that I just
looks tight. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so besides the cartoon and the video games, we didn't really see, I mean, Beetlejuice just became like a cult classic. It kind of stayed quiet. There was always talks about a sequel. So we're going to talk that in a little bit, but before we even get to that part, there was a stage musical that was produced in 2018 with actor Alex Brightman as Beetlejuice himself. I've seen videos. I've never seen the performance. I've never seen the production. It looks cool. Looks fun.
Oh, right. That's the one where fucking, what's her name, gave the handjob. The senator. You hear about that?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so that's what happened. She was given a handjob during the performance of Beetlejuice.
What was her name again? I can't remember.
I forgot her name. But I'm not going to... I know she's like Republican as fuck, but I'm not going to lie. I know what she looks like. She's kind of a fox. Not going to lie.
I know.
And the fact that she's freaky at a theater production, all right.
It was Lauren Bobart?
I think that's
Laura
her name,
Bobart's. Yeah, she's a menace. She's a terrible human being.
But I'm sure she is.
Quite a hottie. Honestly, terrible policy. But she just got through a divorce. I don't know. She was getting high. She gave her boy a handy amongst children in the fucking musical.
Wow.
But them titties were out.
Titties were out. I'm going to look it up right after this, dude. Yeah,
Webster, where are you? You have to rein this in. Jesus.
A Websterless episode? What's that one thing from the Lord of the Rings? You have no power here.
Yeah, no power. talking about Lauren Bobart's titties in the Beetlejuice episode.
I know. We were doing so good.
We were doing so good. Yeah. Wow.
Dude, I'm shocked that we haven't thrown a freaking Rush Hour reference yet.
There's still time.
There is still plenty of time. There's still plenty of time. All right, moving forward now. Aside from the, talking about the musical. Musical, it made, so from the info that I pulled up here from the research, the musical was kind of mediocre. It didn't gain that much money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure for what. So it closed because COVID happened.
Yeah.
And then the show reopened again in 2022, and it actually just closed. Like, they permanently shut down the production because it failed to get the money that was invested in. So a lot. So it just didn't really perform really well with ticket sales. And even though it was on, like, on major Broadway stages, like, you know, like in New York and in L.A.
Yeah.
I'm sure it might have touched on Vegas, maybe. I'm not sure. But, yeah, it just didn't perform well financially. And, so unfortunately, production had to close. But,
you know, perform well during that production was Lauren Bobart right there. She finished that shit real quick. That was...
Oh, that was beautiful. Oh, I'm so glad.
I had to throw one more in there.
That's good. No. But, hey, dude, Webster's not here, man. Throw more. I'm joking.
Where are you?
I'm joking, Webster. We're joking. We love you. I even lost my spot here. All right, here we go.
Part two.
Here you go. So, as mentioned earlier, a sequel for Beetlejuice has actually been in production for the majority of the year. I think it's been in production for over a year now, and it's actually still looking at its 2024 release now, despite writer and actor strikes here. So, here's the fun thing. I don't know if it's fun, but like fun as in like in a sarcastic tone.
Yeah.
Recently, Tim Burton claimed that Beetlejuice 2 had less than 2 days of filming left to shoot prior to the writer's strike. Quote, he says, "We are 99% done," confirms Tim Burton. Wow. Tim Burton, I don't know if I didn't mention this already, but Tim Burton is, in fact, back to direct Beetlejuice 2. And it's also, he's coming back to the director's chair, and it also is bringing back Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice. Winona Ryder is back. Catherine O'Hara is back. This time with Jenna Ortega and former Mrs. Acevedo, Monica Bellucci, and our certified homeboy, Willem Dafoe.
Oh, shit. Yeah. See? Burton's like, we're 99% done. Mm. We really needed the full penetration, full frontal scene with Beetlejuice. They went on strike. How are we supposed to shoot the... Yeah, we got the good cameras for the close-up and everything. Yep. No.
Look, Matt, look, I'm one of the people that did not ask for Beetlejuice 2. No, I'm not really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's gotta suck when you're so close to finishing it and, you know, you gotta put a pause to it because of the writer's strike, you know, so...
We're doing a lot of handjob analogies writers, today. We're doing a lot of...
I know, right? Oh, my God. Look, as much as I support the writers and the actor's strike, I mean, dude, hey, that's gotta suck, too, you know? But, maybe they might learn their lessons. Don't make unnecessary sequels, you know? Shit like this might happen.
That's true. Listen, they didn't get the CGI AI rights yet, so you know what? That's good. That stopped them from finishing the movie. Bam.
Yep. So we'll see what happens. The future for Beetlejuice 2 is still up in the air, but there is no trailer, no official photos or posters have been released for Beetlejuice 2. Just tons of cringy Photoshop fan art that you can easily find on Facebook. Chances are your aunt might have reposted them.
That's right. This is official. Mijo, this is official.
Look at this. They're making Beetlejuice 2. Like I mentioned earlier, dude, Beetlejuice 2 has been like, it's been a word like in the culture for years, right? I remember even hearing about a Beetlejuice 2 like 20 years ago.
Yeah, honestly, the way you delivered that line, though, you were almost channeling Keaton. You were like, Beetlejuice 2 has just been at the word. We're like... like 22 years, right? Like,
oh my god, dude.
You were right there.
I've watched this movie too many times. That was actually Beetlejuice for Halloween like 2 years ago. It was fun.
Oh shit.
All yeah, it was cool. It was cool. Getting into character. I mean, you get drunk and it's really easy to start doing Beetlejuice.
That's true. He's a great drunk. He's a great drunk character to bring up. That's, yeah, I'm with it. I'm with it.
Oh my god.
But there have been rumblings for a while. I remember, like, I've honestly been probably been following it for at least 10 years of, like, people trying to bring it back.
I remember, like, in high school, thanks to comingsoon.net, reading about stories about a Beetlejuice 2 where Beetlejuice goes to, like, Hawaii or something.
Yes, Beetlejuice goes to Hawaii, that's right!
Yeah, I think that was, like, an actual, like, that was, like, a rumor. I don't know if, oh, man, I don't know if that's what they're going to be doing with this Beetlejuice 2, I don't know.
Well, they did leak set photos, and it's definitely not Hawaii.
There like is set photos. Yeah, there's set there's leaked set photos of Winona Ryder and Jenna Ortega. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen one of Beetlejuice yet. Chances are that might be all interior shot. Damn, dude, they might be bringing it back to Culver Studios. Shit.
Oh, shit. All right, we'll get the tour date, dude.
Yeah,
we'll,
I know.
Some scoping out.
Shit. So, I don't know. Man, with, you know, with sequels like these, you know, we've had our Dumb and Dumber 2s, Coming to America, you know, so it's like, I'm just scared. I want it to be good. Of course I want it to be good, but I'm just like, you know, these sequels that have like a 30-something year gap, they turn out to not be all that great, you know? They become forgettable.
They really don't have, they're not a good track record. Not a good track record so far.
Exactly.
And then Burton's also kind of been like not doing too hot in the past decade or so.
I want to say more than a decade.
Yeah, you're right. Probably a little more.
I think, I like Sweeney Todd. It was okay.
Sweeney Todd was good. I was with it, but also it's not the most rewatchable movie.
Yeah, yet, I've only seen that movie once. Yeah, but we're talking about like Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice is probably like one of his top biggest hits that he's ever pumped out, right?
Yeah.
And this movie is super unforgettable. That I just don't want Beetlejuice 2 to be forgettable. You know,
I agree.
It's like it's completely contrast. I would love for him to bring back like stop motion animation when we see like I'm pretty sure we're gonna see some sandworms in this movie, like, you know. But like CGI sandworms, like bring back stop motion. You know, that's the Tim Burton that we all know, you know.
I would say like it's gonna be kind of Wednesday-ish. I feel like it's going to be Wednesday-ish.
You
like
think that, so? That, I didn't see Wednesday.
I'm assuming. Oh, yeah, I actually liked Wednesday. I know people didn't like it. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But it also felt like Tim Burton goth Harry Potter. Like, that's kind of the vibe I was getting from it. So it's not like the OG Addams Family where it had, like a cynicism to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is definitely a lot more commercial. But it looked good. So if it looks as good as Wednesday, I'm cool with that. But I don't know if Burton can do like a 90-minute feature anymore, or like a 2-hour movie anymore. He just doesn't have the pacing. Yeah. It's not there. He's just not there right now. I want to be proven wrong.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, so do I. If this was like 20 years ago, let's say, you know, 15, 16-year-old Fwen and Phil were just be like, yo, dude, Beetlejuice 2 is about to come to theaters. Like, I would probably feel a little optimistic.
Yeah, we'd put a slap on Tarzan Boy and get in the car and we'll go to the fucking theater.
Exactly, but I'm just thinking that because, like, you know, we haven't been, you know, 15-year-old Fwen and Phil haven't been desensitized to unnecessary sequels.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But now that we're in our mid-30s and we've seen all these major sequels get pumped out and they just become, like, dust in the wind, you know? What I like to tell people, it's like, you know what? If you didn't like the sequel or, you know, or the third movie or whatever, just like, look, for instance, there was an Indiana Jones movie that just came out. Came out this year.
Mm-hmm.
Super forgettable, in my opinion, and I love my Indiana Jones movies. I definitely thought it was better than Crystal Skull, but, like, I have made peace with the fact that I have the first three films.
Yes.
You know, that's it. Those, like, it's like, yeah, Crystal Skull and Dial of Destiny are super forgettable. But I'll always have those first three films.
And they're always going to feel so distinct from the shittier sequels. They're going to feel drastically different.
Yeah. But it does sting a little bit walking out of the theater when you see these sequels and you're just left disappointed and stuff like that.
Oh, crying.
Tarzan boy. You know, Oh, my God, dude. Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like I said, like, you know, it hurts a little bit, like, but you'll get over it, man. Yeah, you know, right. At the end of the day, these are just movies. We're having
That's
fun
with them.
That's
what The Mummy 1 and 2 taught me. I'm like, I can still love those two movies and completely forget that Tomb of the Dragon Emperor exists. That was a much quicker turnaround, too.
Hey,
so,
hey man. You know? Hey, that's how I am with Rush Hour 1 and 2. I was like, hey, I got those two Rush Hour films. You know, I'm going to pretend like 3 never really happened.
Yeah,
you
know? I can't rewatch 3, dude. It just cringes me out a little bit.
It's just unrewatchable, dude. Yeah. I think I've only seen 3, honestly, I want to say twice. I don't think I've ever seen it a third time.
It's just none of Chris Tucker's lines land. It's just, I don't know what it is. They should have done it in France, dude. I was looking forward to New York. When they said New York.
Me too. That's what I thought it was going to be. Yeah.
Ugh. We're getting too hot on Rush Hour. Okay, let's talk about Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice. All right, so anyways, bottom line, Beetlejuice 2, it's happening. Chances are it's coming out next year. I guess we'll just wait and see, right?
I'm down.
All right, so anyways, that is pretty much what we got to say about Beetlejuice as far as what we got here in this beautifully written script by me. Yeah. Discussion time, baby. We have reached discussion time. Fuen, give me your thoughts on Beetlejuice, man. What do you think about Beetlejuice?
Motherfucking classic. I mean, if you're catching us as a recent listener, thanks to HorrorCon, thank you again, by the way. A tremendous amount of followers, new listeners. You guys killed it. We appreciate you. We're going to be at more cons. Fantan Webster is going to be on more episodes. She is just incapacitated today. You know how it is, hangovers, whatever it is. I don't know. But we just throwing her under the bus.
She's listening. She's like, you fuckers.
Yeah, I could totally see her listening to it that way. But no, this is to me just a certified fucking banger through and through. It's some of the most original Tim Burton has ever felt. You can clearly tell his mark was, even on the script, even though he's not a writer, this has Burton-isms written all over it. And knowing that the original script was so dark comparatively, you know he had his hands in every part of the cookie jar on this shit. Keaton, the decision to hold back Keaton, it does go a little long because I kind of, you know, it is a when will we get to the fireworks factory situation sometimes. Mm-hmm. But the whole story itself is just original. It's super original. Nothing quite feels like this movie. All the performances are fucking fantastic. The special effects stand out on their own completely. Again, nothing looks like this. And we got a pretty good cartoon out of it. So, honestly, Beetlejuice is a truly unique movie that I'm so glad that it's one of those, like, fundamental, like, your brain is being melded as a human being and you get certain information fed to it. And Beetlejuice kind of, I think, attributed a little bit to my weirdness, and I'm cool with it. I'm actually really cool with it. I think it works out perfect. Fantastic film. I'm just happy that it is so accessible to a wide audience, as well it damn well should be. And I don't think it'd be made today. I don't think there's anything like this. And I feel like there's some lines crossed or whatever it is. It's just not going to work. There's enough darkness in here to make it something of its time. But great movie. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, dude. I mean, you touched on all the major points right there. And also, I kind of want to just give a shout out to everybody that we met at HorrorCon as well. We met some really, really awesome people. Yeah. And if this is your first episode you're tuning in, welcome. I promise Webster, Alex is in all of them. She, you know. So, but yeah, no, I really do appreciate you guys tuning in and chatting with us at our booth. We had a really, really awesome time. And yeah, if this is your first episode, we hope you enjoy Beetlejuice as much as we do, because I'm about to talk about how much I enjoyed it. And yeah dude, I really fucking love Beetlejuice. It's you hit the word fundamental, and I have to 100% agree with you, because, like, I feel like this is a movie, like, I don't have any kids, but, like, if they've reached, like, age, like, 5 or 6 where they can grasp the idea of what a movie is, I would definitely show them this. Yeah. You know, like, this is a movie where I'm just like, hey, dude, have fun with this. This is a really fun movie, and I think you're really going to like it. Just like how my parents did with me.
I know, I think, our parents told us this shit. The most Christian-ass motherfucking God-fearing people were just like, yeah, let's put this babysitter shit on for him.
Yeah. No, dude, it's super, super wildly entertaining, wildly original. I fucking love it, from, like, Keaton to the sets to Burton. Just, you can tell, like, this is a straight-up Tim Burton movie that was made with love, dude. And it's super, super just, man, it's a really unforgettable film. Really. Mm-hmm. And it feels timeless, kind of like, no pun intended, but like kind of like Back to the Future feels timeless.
Yes.
This is one of those films that also feels like it's got the same level of timelessness.
You know, and I love the fuck out of this movie, man. I've seen this movie, I can't tell you how many times I've seen it. Like, I know it like the back of my hand. Yeah, same. And it's a movie that I'm always down to rewatch, especially around this time of the year. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So
it feels Halloween. It feels Halloween.
Yeah, it definitely feels Halloween. This is easily a movie I watch at least once a year, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And I will continue watching this movie so many times, even though I know it so many. Like, it's... Oh, I guess we can go back to our... We can transition to our next question.
Yeah.
I love this movie so much. So, we both love it. Fwen, answer me this right here. Where does Beetlejuice sit with the rest of your favorite Tim Burton films? If you were to rank them, if you can rank me like five Tim Burton films...
Top five? Top five?
Yeah. Beetlejuice doesn't even have to be in it, but like, you know, but where would Beetlejuice sit?
Oh, man. Well, first... Thank you for not saying riddle me this. You were so close. I can feel you were right there.
I was going to.
You were so close. I know you too well.
The idea crossed my mind.
You know,
it
wouldn't
make sense because that's a Joel Schumacher.
I fucking knew it. I was like, but he's not going to do it because Tim Burton only did the first two Batman movies. And that's a Joel Schumacher thing. That's, I knew 100%
oh my
that was
God.
Mine. I
feel that like, is so good.
Wow. Awesome. Okay, that was, yeah.
Dude, let's just make out already.
Scott, we're back. Wow, totally hit the record button again on accident. That.
Oh my god, dude. That's hilarious.
All right. I think Beetlejuice would actually sit, if I'm looking at my top ones. Okay, so within the top five is going to be... we don't count Night Before Christmas, despite him producing it. He didn't direct it. I'm not putting it on there. That is a Henry Selick film to me. Just, mm-hmm. That's my one caveat right there.
Yep.
But I would say Edward Scissorhands is in there. Batman Returns is in there. Beetlejuice is in there for sure. Sleepy Hollow is also in there.
Mm-hmm. And Big Fish or Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
I'm going to take Sleepy Hollow out. I'm going to put Big Fish in there. No, okay. Sleepy Hollow's in there. Damn, no, because Batman 89, Burton has some fucking bangers. Holy shit.
Yeah, he does. He really does, man.
All right.
Did you or Alex say that you have not seen Ed Wood?
No, I've seen Ed Wood. Seen Ed Wood.
Webster hasn't seen it. Yeah.
It's been so long, though. I've only seen Ed Wood one time, and it was back when I could buy Netflix on DVDs. Like, dude, you know, we do the thing.
Yeah.
So I got to go back to it.
Yeah, it's worth a rewatch, man.
I mean, my number one's always going to be Edward Scissorhands. Number two's likely always going to be Batman Returns. It is one of my favorite Batman movies. I'm going to say I would go also probably Sleepy Hollow, number three. I really do love that movie. Mm-hmm. It just has a place in my heart. But Beetlejuice, number four. I say Beetlejuice number four. Okay. Nice. And then five is really hard to pick. Five's always the worst one because I'm between Big Fish, Batman 89. Like, it's one of those interchangeable slots right there. Ed Wood's also probably a great movie too, but I got to give it more time of day. But yeah, it's definitely within the top four. So I would say it fights for number three, but one and two will always be Edward Scissorhands because it's just a sentimental great film for myself. And of course, Batman Returns because I don't think there's a superhero movie like it. And I don't think there ever will be. So,
Cool. Very, very cool.
What
I
you
like
got?
That. All right. So, I really fucking love Beetlejuice, man. But I don't think it's my number one. Damn, this is going to be a tough one for me. This has always been a tough one because, like, as much as, like, what I feel about Tim Burton these last, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
Man, it is really, really, like, I would be lying to you if I say that I'm not, a major fan of his early stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember writing book reports on him in school, you know, in high school and stuff. I gotta go with... Damn, dude, I really fucking love Ed Wood. Like, I love Ed Wood a lot, only because, like... He's a film director. He's got this passion, even though he's like very bad at it. You know.
Yes.
It's got a lot of charm for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, here we go, man. I'm gonna go with Beetlejuice, my favorite one.
What? Number one? Okay.
Number two is Ed Wood. Number three is Batman.
89.
Okay.
man, and this
I know it's your number. I know it's up there for you.
And this is a hard one, man, because like as much as I really love Ed Wood, you know, I didn't watch Ed Wood until like high school. Maybe I think you mentioned, yeah, like the Netflix DVD era.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's when I first watched it. And then I actually ended up buying it at Best Buy. I was like, dude, I fucking love this movie. And I just watched it. And I've seen it so many times. I think I've seen it just as much. But, dude, man, I cannot ignore Mars Attacks.
Oh, yeah.
Mars Attacks is another one that's got the same amount of silliness that you'll find in Beetlejuice.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. It's insane. I freaking love Mars Attacks. And... man, Big Fish is also fantastic as well.
That's a great Ewan McGregor. All the good.
Sleepy Hollow. Here's the thing about Sleepy Hollow. I'm always having a fun time watching Sleepy Hollow, but it's I don't think it's anywhere near my top five favorite Tim Burton films.
Oh, it's all style, no substance. That's it. But it's a lot of style.
Yeah, definitely. It's very spooky. The color palette or lack of color palette, I should say. It's great. But, man, I guess I'm going Beetlejuice, Ed Wood, Batman, Edward Scissorhands, Batman Returns.
That's a highly respectable list. I'm with that. I can totally understand the angles there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's my Tim Burton list right there, man. But, anyways, how are we doing on time?
We're doing great. I do have one more fun question before we get to our ratings.
Phil, absolutely. What you got?
Fortunately, you died. One of us died. We both died at some point. We die. 2 months passes. And you know what? Your whole home that you go back to in good old sunny Los Angeles is completely different.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What do you come back to?
Oh, my gosh.
How are you trying to haunt these new occupants that are in your home? Or old occupants. God. Who knows? I don't know how it goes. And at what point do you call Beetlejuice? At one point, do you call
him? Oh, oh my God! Okay, here he goes. I come back. All right, we live in LA. We're in LA. Lots of content creators out here, dude. Lots of them.
Oh,
lots of content creators. As much as I hate to say the freaking word, I come back to a whole bunch of like, man. I hate to sound like an angry old man yelling at the cloud, but I'm going to right now. I come back. I come back to a whole bunch of TikTokers just taking over, and they're just doing like the most cringeworthy dances. They're doing these audio tracks by replacing audio with something. I don't know what, but it's become bad to the point where like they step outside and they immediately make it to influencers in the wild, the Instagram page. that's how bad they are, and I'm a ghost. I'm trying to scare them away, but dude, it's just not working. It is just not working. I do my best. I pull my face off. I haunt them in their sleep, and they're just ignoring me. I'm a very bad ghost, dude. I suck at being a ghost.
Yeah.
So that's where I have to call the bioexorcist himself, dude. I have to call Beetlejuice, and he comes in, and oh my God, he scares the shit out of him. Instead of a giant snake, he turns into a giant green screen for these TikTokers. And inside that green screen, oh man, the most frightening images of spiders, snakes, their biggest fears of these TikTokers will show up in this green screen. And and it's like it's kind of like, you know, remember how in Beetlejuice where Adam and Barbara used bed sheets and they just poked holes in them?
Yeah.
Beetlejuice does the same thing, but with this green screen. You know, and this green screen is scaring the shit out of these content creators to the point where they're out of my apartment and boom, bam. We crack open a cold beer and we just sip it together and we just chill and watch videos of Monica Bellucci.
I like it. Okay, cool. All right. I am with that. For me, I don't know. I live in an artist compound, so obviously a bunch of fucking artists are going to be taking over this place. So, you know, to me, but I think what happens after 2 months I come in and supposed to haunt this place and I'm like, damn, their paintings are shit. So... it looks really, really stupid. I'm like, how are these people like able to afford this rent? Because it's not cheap. And yeah, so, you know, I'm getting annoyed by just the lack of progress in their work. And then obviously, you know, I live in downtown, so, you know, they're going to cringe. Like, they're just doing like the high life stuff, the LA thing. They're new. Right there. And then I call Beetlejuice because I think their lives can't get any more empty. And we actually fix them. Like, we together, you know? Like, his attempts to haunt them actually scares them enough to create better art. And then, you know what? We do become that exhibit. We do become, we're like, oh, cool. We accidentally become these figures in these people's things. And you know what happens? They just, they share on my Instagram and they become t-shirts. And that's all it is. That's all it is, because that's the most LA shit that's ever happened right there.
Oh my God.
And they don't fucking leave, because no matter how many times you try to get them out of there, you know, it just sells more t-shirts. So, yeah.
I love it.
But we still get to use the projector, so I think me and the juice are happy, you know? I think we're good.
I love that.
Can watch some old WWF pay-per-views. That's what I'm about to do. Like, why are they playing SummerSlam 1997 again? I don't understand. That's Survivor Series, man. Shut the fuck up.
That's good.
I want to see the Montreal Screwjob, goddammit.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. I want to see Hitman freaking wave the WCW with his finger, dude.
Yeah, so all they cut it out in this version of it. We'll fucking play the YouTube clip.
That's good. That's really good. I love that, thanks, dude. That's fucking awesome.
All right.
If Webster was here, I would really love to hear what she had to say, but man, alas. She would have come up with a really cool one.
I know. I agree. We'll save it for the next one. We'll see. We'll get a quick juice sum up at the beginning. Yes.
Good call. All right, Fwayne. I think we have reached that time of the podcast where I got to ask you, man. Mm-hmm. After watching Beetlejuice, I'm sure you've seen this many times now, reflecting back, what would you rate Beetlejuice out of 5 handbooks for the recently deceased?
I am going to rate it, I would say, 4.5 aggressive sandworms out of 5. Definitely 4.5. Yeah, dude. It is one of those the only flaw I think I can really give it. It's not really a big flaw, but it does take a little bit to actually get the juice in there. And that's about it, to be honest with you. Because to me, it's one of the most original movies I've ever seen. I love it. And it's a true testament to Burton at his height, at his most, you know.
Yeah.
At his best, really. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's me.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I love that. I think I'm also going to be going 4.5. Dude, honestly, the movie is fine. It's actually a lot better than just fine. It's pretty fantastic. It was easy for me to give it a 4.5 despite how many times I've seen it. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie's like, this is easily like a comfort film and stuff like that, but I just don't want to be too comfortable to the point where it's going to affect my rating for it, you know?
Yeah.
But watching it, like really dissecting the movie, like, there might be a couple of, like, script, dare I say, like, somewhat plot holes here and there. But, dude, plot holes is not going to affect what I overall think of this film, you know? So, like, despite those small little tiny flaws in the script, dude, like, and also, like, what you say, too, like, you know, it does take a while to actually pick up the pace a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, dude, honestly, dude, this is still a fantastic movie. It's a classic for a reason.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So,
I agree.
It's just a really well-made film. It takes a really talented film director like Tim Burton to make something like this, especially at a time like this where there was no movies like this, you know?
None. No, definitely. It's a truly original film. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Absolutely. So, that's where I'm at. Yeah.
All right. So we got a 2 4.5s. Mm-hmm. We'll clue you guys in on Webster's rating, of course, next week, which is a very, very special week. Certain Friday, you know? It's a certain Friday. We might be covering a certain movie. We only do it once in a while. So, you know, stay tuned for that. But that, ladies and gentlemen, was our first October episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. Yay!
That's it, dude. October, baby.
All right. Usually Alex takes the show out, so I am just going to just keep talking because I don't know. All these years, never pay attention. So, anyway.
Me too. She's so good at that.
She's so good at it.
Yeah, dude. Exactly. I can never. Yeah, I'm going to let you go ahead and take a swing at it, dude.
Yep. Well, thank you again for listening. You can find us, of course, on Instagram at the Horrible People's Podcast. That's HORRORBLE People's Podcast. That's right. This is a production of the Horrible People's Network. That is HORRORBLE. People's Network, all one word, and of course that comes with a slew of shows underneath it, one of which I host additionally called the NPC Gaming Podcast. I'm going to plug myself because, damn it, I'm doing the outro. Anyways.
There you go.
Yes. Where can we find you, Phil, elsewhere?
Dude, I mean, on the social medias, you can find me on Instagram at Phil Acevedo, and I'm also on YouTube. It's just called Philip Acevedo. I post videos there of just talking about movies. Sometimes I like to post a little short film here and there, and yeah, that's pretty much where people can find me. Yeah.
All right, there you go. See, well, that of course was Beetlejuice. Look out for a major episode next week as spooky season continues. And with that, honestly, saying any name three times, unless you're getting a little busy, might not be a great idea. You know, you don't ever know what you're going to summon. You never know what you're going to summon. Yeah.
There you go.
That was the Beetlejuice right there.
It's showtime.
All right, peace.
All right, later.